Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
I'm Margot Robbie, and I play Bobby.
And I'm Ryan Gosling, and I play Ken.
Max is now the exclusive streaming home of Barbie.
So cool.
And the Max with Ads plan is included with your Cricket $60 unlimited plan at no additional cost. Log in with your Cricket username and password to experience Max on all your favorite devices.
This is the best day ever.
It is the best day ever.
Don't miss Barbie, now streaming on Max. Phone plan streams in standard definition. Programming subject to change. Fees, terms, and restrictions apply. See cricketwireless.com for details.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello Rank Squad and welcome to Ranks FC. This is your favourite football podcast back for another week. My name is Jack Collins and I will be your host today. And joining me as ever is the Rank God, Mr. Sam Tai. How are you doing, Sam?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thank you very much. Later on, we are going to have the final special guest of the Sans Dean Jones era, which is exciting. Gianni Battiste is joining us to talk Fantasy Premier League and all the dilemmas that you need to beat your friends later on in the year as the season gets underway in the Premier League. But before we get to that, Sam, start things off with things we love.
Yeah, and the thing I love this week is Leeds United playing Football Manager in the transfer market. And you know what? We joked last week, didn't we, about Chelsea's owner, Todd Burley, playing it in real life. But it's actually Leeds United that are doing it. They've signed Mark Rocker from Bayern Munich. They've signed Brendan Aaronson from Salzburg. They're set to swoop for Tyler Adams. He might even be a Leeds United player by the time this comes out. And Luis Sinisterra of Feyenoord, there's been a fee agreed for him as well. They've also been credited with a lot of interest in players like Mohamed Camara of Salzburg and Charles de Ketelaar of Club Bruges. This is it, isn't it? This is literally Football Manager. Yeah. Glorious.
It's Football Manager kind of Red Bull edition.
It's England's answer to Bayer Leverkusen in the transfer market is how I'm going to bill it. I think it's absolutely awesome. It's just loads of fun. And if you're a fan of this club and you're seeing these players linked to you, you know, age sort of 20 to 23 profile, exciting, some of the best players playing at the kind of just below the top tier of Europe. It's really fun to watch and it must feel fantastic to know that these players are interested in signing for you as well.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk a little bit about Adams and Sinisterra. And we'll start with Adams because he's come in now, you know, obviously Calvin Phillips, Leeds boy, born and bred, left for Manchester City last week. And I'm sure there's a fair few tears shed over that transfer. Not particularly any ill will by all accounts. Everyone seems to be pretty proud of him and the fact that he's going to take that next step. And everyone's, you know, pretty pleased that he's going to get that opportunity to learn and develop under Pep Guardiola. It seems all very, very friendly. And but Tyler Adams is coming in, not as a like-for-like replacement, but someone who's going to fill that gap in midfield alongside the aforementioned Mark Rocca, who's joined from Bayern Munich. It's an interesting one, Sam, because Adams isn't the same player, but he is going to bring a whole lot of drive and dynamism to this Leeds midfield.
He's not the same, but like it's obviously going to be really hard for Leeds to find a player like Calvin Phillips in a like-for-like replacement.
There are many, yeah.
But Adam, yeah, exactly. But Adams at least is, he's a holding midfielder who can play in defence. I mean, he can't play, I wouldn't play him centre-back like Phillips did in a three, but Adams does play right-back and right-wing-back really well. So it's the same kind of midfield profile with a defensive instinct. And I think Adams is the kind of player that can sit in the, at the base. He probably won't. He'll probably sit there with Mark Rocca in a pairing, which is fine. But between them, they've got enough defensive instinct and positional awareness to basically succeed in that area. It does feel a little bit like they're having to replace Phillips with two men, but that's just the way of it. That's how good Phillips is.
Yeah, yeah, no, I completely agree. It's one of those, isn't it, where you're like, you have to change this around because Marsh is going to play, you'd imagine, this 4-2-2-2 system, which he played to such success on the continent. Well, with Salzburg at least, if not with Leipzig. But it does mean that when you come to this, you kind of are changing things around. And Phillips, whilst can play almost anywhere because he's that good, you know, you can play two different players in there to kind of give you back what he had. And that will work for Marsh because of the way that this system is developed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm expecting to see not necessarily Rocca and Adams the entire time, but you get a bit of Click in there. You might even see a bit of, like, you know, Strauch in there, who ends up playing in midfield sometimes. You've got different options there, different pairings for different games. That's quite exciting. And you need the options. And, you know, it takes us onto the other player here, which is Luis Sinisterra, who looks set to be joining as well. They've had a fee agreed at least. And, you know, he gives you a different kind of look in the attacking midfield band as well. He's someone that I think will play in those narrow positions a lot more comfortably than someone like Rafinha. And he's very, very exciting. You know, a needle player, someone that can take the ball in tight spaces and dribble and back heel and find his way out of a shoebox sometimes. It's with a goal threat too. He's been absolutely phenomenal for Feyenoord and really excited to see him come to the Premier League.
Yeah, for my money, one of the best players in the Europa Conference League last season. Obviously, we got to see him live in the flesh in the final in that game against Roma. He didn't have his best game against Roma. He wasn't able to influence proceedings as much as he has been able to in other rounds. But, you know, up to the final, definitely one of the best players in the competition, was in our team of the tournament, someone who is able to light up games on his own, who has that ability to make things happen. And that's exactly what, you know, Leeds are going to be crying out for if Rafinha does go, which looks incredibly likely at this point. You know, you need someone who's going to come in here and be that spark player. And Sinisterra is very much a spark.
He is, yeah. And it just kind of feels like they're basically spending the Phillips and Rafinha money, aren't they? I mean, Phillips is already gone and Rafinha seems like he will absolutely go. And the important thing is to get some of those replacements in early doors. It's the Jack Grealish approach. And you kind of have to get at least half your business done beforehand, before they've both gone. Because then if you are staring at the squad list and you are looking at a team without Rafinha and Phillips and no players in, then it starts to get a bit bleak. It's a bit like, I've a number of WhatsApp groups recently, I've received a picture of Manchester United's official midfield list on their website, and it's proper bleak. And you just really want to avoid that where possible.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Fun quiz question for you. Do you know the last two American outfielders to have taken the field together in the Premier League? Because this is a good one.
Was it for Fulham?
It was for Fulham, because we used to be Full America back in the day. It's interesting. It's not Pat, who you think.
So, right. So is it not Clint Dempsey and Brian McBride?
It is Clint Dempsey, but he is not the second player. Is not Brian McBride. It's also not Carlos Bocanegra.
Don't know the answer to this one.
It's Eddie Johnson. Remember him? Fulham played Clint Dempsey and Eddie Johnson together in 2010-11. They were the last two American outfielders to take the field for the same side in the Premier League. Imagine Leeds are going to be breaking that duck next year with Adams and Aronson. Definitely exciting times to be a Leeds fan. I don't think anybody's doubting that. There's lots going on. And Jesse Marsh's US revolution rolls on with a little bit of that Red Bull model added to the mix. I'm going to take us on to my thing I love. And my thing I love this week is that today, as you're listening to this, if you're listening to it on release day, Euro 2022 begins. And it is incredibly exciting. 16 teams in this tournament. And I reckon 7 of them can win it. Now, I'm excited for this tournament, and I'm really, really excited because I've got that kind of childlike glee about a tournament that, you know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend to be an expert on all things women's football. And if you want a deeper dive, there are plenty of brilliant podcasts that have given such brilliant overviews of this tournament and will continue to cover it in real depth through the thing. I've loved Wrighty's House coming back through this whole thing and really enjoying their build up to it. But there's loads all over the place. You know, Football Weekly have just released a women's Football Weekly, which is brilliant. But I just wanted to kind of talk very briefly through these teams that I think can win it, because we'll start with England on home soil. This Lionesses squad is incredibly talented and incredibly deep, and there is a lot of confidence around this side that they are going to be, you know, the team that can win a home tournament on English soil since 1966, the first team to actually get over that line. Obviously, the men's team came close in Euro 2020. The Lionesses, I feel, probably have an even better shot of getting over the line here. And they have Lauren Hemp, who is being posted by so many as who they think is going to be the poster girl of this tournament in so many ways. She's an absolutely glorious watch, weaves through defenders, mini Messi in many ways. But it does feel like this England side have the potential and the ability to go all the way. Then there's Spain, who basically have Alexia, who's probably the best player in Europe right now. And the core of this Spain team is basically the core of this Barcelona team, who have been all conquering in Spain. They obviously lost the final of the UWCL to Leon. But that team has that kind of telepathy that goes on within these Barcelona ranks. And the manager, Vilda, has been criticised for lack of picking players outside of Barcelona, basically, and failing to acknowledge that there is more depth in Spain than just the Barcelona ranks. But the core of this squad is still incredibly talented, and there's a lot of people tipping Spain to go all the way. Norway's an interesting one because Ada Hegerberg is back playing international football, and that's so massive for this squad. She's just led Leon to another UWCL, obviously. Caroline Graham Hansen in that attack as well. Another unreal season at Barcelona for her. And that forward line just feels like it has the potential to dismantle anyone, which is a really kind of interesting proposition. There's not the same kind of level of depth through the squad, according to pretty much all the experts, but this forward line has the potential to do anybody on their day. And that makes them a kind of prospect that, you know, Norway were excellent without Hegerberg, and now they've just brought, for many, the best player in the world back into the fold, which makes things incredibly exciting. So they're on the kind of must watch list. Then there's the Netherlands, who have Vivian Miedema, who will feel like she's playing on home soil, right? Having played for Arsenal for the last couple of years, she's revered in this country, revered in the WSL as someone who is probably the best player in England right now. They were the 2017 champions, the Netherlands. They also have the likes of Lieke Martens, who plays for Barcelona. She's a former Ballon d'Or winner. There's a lot going on in this mix of the Netherlands. Some question marks as well, but especially over the manager, but they are an incredibly strong unit. You go to Sweden, who are ranked 2 in the world, won silver at the Olympics. It's a very well-balanced squad, maybe not the same amount of superstar names in this one, but just a squad that feels like it's capable of rolling over anyone, a really well-knit, well-put-together squad with a lot of depth in it. Go to France, who are ranked 3 in the world. They were knocked out in the quarterfinals of the last 3 European championships. Now, they've not brought Le Sommer or Amandine Henry from Lyon, who a lot of Lyon fans are very, very upset about this, by all accounts, that the manager has left these two out. There will be questions if they don't reach at least the last 4. So they're hoping to go one better at the very least than the last couple of tournaments. And then you finish with Germany, who have loads of questions, but they are also eight-time champions. Deep squad, but they're in indifferent form. A side who know how to get things done, and it's Germany in a tournament. They just do well, don't they? Like, it's just what happens. Germany turn up, no matter what form they're in, no matter how the squad looks, no matter what the balance is, and Germany will turn up and almost certainly go deep in this one. So yeah, seven teams who I think genuinely all have a really good chance of winning it out of 16. That's a massive, massive proportion. And it makes for, I think, one of the most exciting tournaments in ages. I'm going to a game on the 12th between Germany and Spain at Brentford, and then I've bagged the ticket for the final, which I'm absolutely over the moon about. So yeah, absolutely nice. Can't wait for this tournament to kick off. That kind of childlike glee on the eve of a tournament, I'm really feeling at the moment. So yeah, Euro 2022, the thing I love this week.
Sounds like an England win to me, mate. Don't know about those seven, just sounds like an England win.
Well, I think the favourite, Sam, that's it's always a good sign, right?
Come on, England.
It's always a good sign. Right, that are all of the things that we love for this week. After the break, we're going to be bringing in Gianni to talk all things FPL. Don't go anywhere.
Walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer, then no time left for a jog.
When everyone else is relying on you, it's easy to put your needs last. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.
Welcome back to Ranks FC, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Mr. Gianni Battice. Gianni, welcome to the show. It's so good to have you. You are officially now an official FPL panelist these days, I believe they're called. But welcome to Ranks FC, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm a big fan of the show. So yeah, looking forward to bringing a bit of FPL to the show for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is one we haven't done for a little while. We did it a couple of years ago, I think with Jules, actually. And it was one of those that we looked at before the season. And it felt like the right time to start talking about this. All I've seen over my feed the last couple of days is the price drops, is the players starting to filter in. And it's got everybody thinking, it's got everybody very excited. So you're going to give us some dilemmas here and ways in which to kind of overcome those in order to beat your mates this season.
Yeah, it's been very exciting the last few days as we've seen the prices announced and they've been teasing the clubs day by day, and FPL have been quite generous with pricing this year. So it allows us as managers to perhaps squeeze in a few extra premium players that we want, which I think is a great way of reaching the more casual audience to fill your team with your Liverpool, your Man City, your Chelsea assets. But yeah, three big dilemmas. And as always, there are hundreds of dilemmas every week for an engaged FPL manager. But if we just go top line, we'll go through three of the dilemmas that you might face when planning your game week one team. And I'll give my opinion as to what side of the fence I sit on. And if we go in at number three, do you go for premium at the back? So lots of expensive defenders, or do you squeeze in that one extra premium forward in your team at the compromise of too many premium defenders? So it's a big debate. Like, of course, we want those high ceiling players. And if you go bigger up top, we're thinking Haaland and Salah, and you can probably afford a Son or a Vardy or a Kane alongside these guys. Or do you just have Salah and maybe Haaland, but then you have a defense full of those attacking fullbacks? Your Trents, your Robertsons, James, Chilwell, Perisic, Cancelo. There are so many now that just deliver year on year. And historically, us FPL managers always go 3-5-2, 3-4-3. We don't want many defenders in our team because we think they're boring and they won't get goals and assists. But the game's changed, right? Premier League has changed. The way football is played has changed. And these fullbacks are at times wide forwards and they just get bags of goals and assists. So I'm looking at this season thinking, for the first time ever, I might go for four or even five premium defenders because their returns are just so, so good. But it does mean I can't have three premiums up top. So probably just settle on a Salah and a Haaland, and it means no Son, but I will go big at the back instead. So it's an interesting dilemma, and many will think they'll go big at the back. And then as the weeks draw closer, you just want to fit that one extra big name forward in. But for me, I'm looking at it and thinking the value in these defenders is just too good this season. We have the Chelsea wing backs at 6.0. We have Trent at 7.5. He should be 9 million of anyone's money. They're just a four. Perisic came in at 5.5. The equivalent in midfield is like a lower table team's DM at the same price, who's just not going to get any points. So for me, it looks really sensible to go big at the back this season.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. We saw last year, right? There was the players, you know, your Trents and your Robertsons who have been doing this for ages, but a lot of fullbacks picking up lots of points. And I suppose the kind of kicker here is what exactly counts as a premium position? Because, you know, you look at someone like James Justin, right, from Leicester, who obviously had big injury problems last year and didn't play for a lot of this campaign, but is going to be that player going forward and will start to offer that. And, you know, who knows what Brendan's going to play throughout the start of this season. But if they do go with wing-backs again, you know, how does that kind of fit in here? How does it, is an Ivan Perisic a defender? Do we know that yet? Do those kind of things fit into this strategy?
Yeah, it's a great point. And Perisic has been announced as a defender, which was really, really excited about, because many would say, you know, he's always been a midfielder and only the last few seasons we've seen him playing wing back. Denzel Dumfries would be listed as a defender, so surely Perisic has to be. So we weren't too sure, but yeah, he came in as a 5.5 defender. So Perisic is going to be a really popular pick. And in the 4.5 bracket, you're right. We have the likes of James Justin. We have the likes of Lewis Dunk, who, yeah, he's a centre-back, but gets on the end of so many set pieces, a real goal threat and a great upside as an FPL pick. So there are very good 4.5 options, but there's better 5.5 and 6 million options. And it's not that much difference to just find that extra million, find that extra 1.5, which if you're doing a midfielder up front, it's tricky to do.
Yeah, this is it. And I mean, I suppose that kind of comes on to that next question. You kind of sort of started on it there about Lewis Dunk, but what is the trade-off for centre-back? If it is a centre-back, and, you know, obviously we saw Van Dijk, Matip, Laporte, Rudiger pick up a lot of points last year, mm-hmm. right? You know, 150 plus. And they are all traditional centre-backs. If you are going for a centre-back, does it have to be someone who is in a team who aren't going to concede loads because, you know, the upsides are going to be lower in terms of attacking output?
Yeah, it. You look at centre-backs, and for me, I look at their ceiling. Arsenal is a great example. Ben White, for me, his ceiling most weeks is going to be 6 points. Best case scenario, I'll get my clean sheet points at 4, my appearance points at 2. Yet Gabriel is 5 million. With Gabriel, I know I've got potential for bonus points because the bonus points system is very detailed. There's 38 metrics, things like clearances, interceptions, blocks. Gabriel performs really well in the BPS and therefore gets rewarded. And likewise, he gets on the end of set pieces. So he's got that goal threat. So you spend an extra 0.5 for Gabriel, but it's way worth the difference because you get the upside. His ceiling isn't 6. His ceiling is 10 or 12 each week.
I got a question on Trent. You talked about him being 7.5, was it?
Yeah.
And you thinking that he should be more like 9?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He must. So 7.5 must be the most expensive a defender has ever been.
8.0 years back, we saw Leighton Baines and John Terry hit 8 million. Now, whoa, they weren't anywhere near as consistent as Trent's been the last couple of seasons, who just every season seems to get 200 points. To put that into perspective, last year, the best performing forward, who was 12.5 million, Harry Kane, didn't reach 200 points. Yet Trent at 7.5 does. So yeah, the value there is insane.
In terms of, you know, the forwards, and I think a lot of people had this problem last year. I mean, I know I did. It felt like, you know, the likes of Salah and Son being midfielders shifted things around in terms of there wasn't many out and out forwards in the Premier League. In the, you know, number nines were traditionally counted as the players who would stay as a forward, and wingers tended to be classed as midfielders. Is that going to shift this year? Because there was a lot of talk about it.
Yeah, many of us thought we'd see Salah and Son relisted, reclassified, and we haven't seen that. They remain midfielders. We have seen the likes of Jota, the likes of Havertz move from midfield to forward, and I think FPL have looked at it and gone, okay, who's occupying that central number nine or false nine spot in the team? And even though it might be Son or Salah that are more advanced than that number nine, they've remained midfielders, but the out-and-out nine has shifted. So Jota and Havertz have been reclassified. And that does take the appeal away from the likes of Jota or Havertz because, of course, you don't get the clean sheet point if you're a forward and you get one fewer points for scoring a goal. It's 4 versus 5. So, yeah, sure, we might get them a little bit higher up the pitch. Havertz is a forward. Jota is a forward, or certainly should be next season. but we prefer them when they're out of position in FPL, and then you benefit from that out of position category.
It's quite a weird one because like a lot of people struggled, I think, to fill those three spots. Yeah. It was like, you know, who are we bringing in? There isn't enough players in those positions. So I suppose a little bit more depth to choose from, and obviously the likes of Haaland coming in, the likes of Darwin coming in, are almost certainly going to be put into those kind of forward roles. But it does mean that there's a little bit broader of a pool to choose from.
Also, like Bamford coming back to fitness might be a bit of a saving grace here as well. Like in a very, very limited pool last season, you also lost a couple of players like Bamford to basically the whole season. There was just nothing, absolutely nothing. I saw people, you know, some of the content creators I was watching, you know, ended up with like Ollie Watkins and Joe Gelhart in their team at the end. I was like, well, that was never the plan, was it?
That means
it's gone really wrong up front.
Yeah. And last season, for the first time in a long while, we didn't see value. So when you compare some of these players, even if we look ahead, Bamford at 7.5 this season, Dominic Calvert-Lewin at 8 million. These guys we know, yeah, sure, they can clock up points. But when you look at the defenders in the same price band, you can spend 7.5 on a Trent, less on a Cancelo, less on a Reece James or a Chilwell. The value you get from these defenders is so much better than the forwards. That these forwards aren't going to have 200 point seasons, very unlikely. Yet you know, with Cancelo got 201 points last season, Trent, as I said, beat 200, Robertson 186. The value in the defense is just so generous that I am thinking this season, for the first time ever, I'll be setting up with four or five premiums at the back.
Yeah, and playing a five at the back formation.
Yeah. Jani, you seem pretty set on this, or very set on this. How confident are the others in the community at this early stage in doing this? And does this feel like a bit of a risk from your part? Are you the black sheep here, or is this a pretty common thread?
Yeah, it seems about 50-50 at the moment. I think as the weeks draw closer, more will look at a Gabriel Jesus announcement and go, oh, he's really well owned, and
they're going to bottle Rafinha. It, is what you're saying.
I think so, because it's a bold call. As soon as you go bold, five at the back, you don't have that flexibility to jump on an attacking bandwagon after three game weeks, who's Darwin's scored loads of goals and is actually starting straight away for Liverpool. Well, how do you get a 9 million Darwin into your team when you've got all that money at the back? You need two or three transfers. That's hit. That's potential wildcard territory. So it's quite a rigid formation to invest money at the back, because you can't just make that one simple move to move funds around. You need two or three moves. So it's a bold call, but I can't help but see that value. And I don't see them as defenders. Yeah, Perisic isn't a defender. Chelsea, we caveat them, their wing backs, with the fact that Tuchel perhaps is looking at a back four. Pre-season will tell us more. The appeal might lesser for the Chelsea lads, but even in a back four, you expect the fullbacks to still be sky high. So yeah, one to monitor pre-season, but I think I'm pretty set.
Yeah, I also, it's one of those, isn't it? When the excitement gets hold of you, you're like, oh, I could have all these shiny new forwards into the team. Everyone's going to get very excited and move away from the strategy. But I do actually agree with you on paper. That's not to say that when I see Darwin and Jesus in that first thing, I go like, wee, off we go again. But alas, in terms of actual on paper, I'm completely with you. Let's move on to number two, shall we, Jenny?
Yeah, number two is all about Man City. The team in the league that score the most goals, that have the highest ceiling in terms of the number of points their players can get. At any given week, you're not surprised if Man City win 5-6-0. You can't say that for any other team really in the Premier League, Liverpool possibly. But for some reason, we don't really invest in Man City assets. Historically, if I look back to last season, Cancelo was in most teams, mine included. But, you know, Foden at times, KDB at times. But we don't fill our teams with Man City. Why? Well, we're often scared of Pep Roulette, as it's dubbed in the FPL community. Which wide forwards are going to start? Now, this season, we might just be able to, one, see some bargains in their wide forwards because of the price points. We look at Grealish, who's 7, Mahrez, who's 8, Foden, who's 8. Knowing that they're wide forwards in the team that score the most amount of goals in the league, that's very favourable pricing. But the fear has always been minutes. How many starts are they going to get? Are they going to start 2 in 3 or 1 in 2? Now, knowing Gabriel Jesus has moved on, knowing Sterling could move on, possibly we see a little bit more space for, say, Mahrez on the right to have less competition and therefore start more games. Now, when Mahrez plays, Mahrez picks up FPL points, but we're always just worried about Pep Roulette. Now, because of Haaland coming into the team, possibly those that are creators in the team, your Grealishes, your Fodens, your Mahrezes, obviously KDB, possibly they're going to have someone always getting on the end of these crosses, on the end of these assists. And that'll be that, and we could see great guns there. The fixtures for Man City are so good the big question you've got in your team, yes, you might have Cancelo and Haaland. Do you complement that with one of those other wide forwards that I mentioned? Or do you go safer for your Mason Mounts, your Sakas, your Bowens, who you know are guaranteed to start pretty much every game when fit?
So really, obviously, if you've managed to convince yourself that Pep Roulette is less of a problem this season or could be less of an issue.
Well, currently it is because there's less players, but yeah, that's not to say there won't be soon.
That's the way it is. Then you start to mould the question around, as you've kind of intimated there, Jenny, who can benefit the most from Erling Haaland? So Erling Haaland himself, obviously, becomes a factor in the team. But which players around him does he kind of lift their level for? So my personal opinion here is that someone like Jack Grealish is going to really benefit from Erling Haaland. I just think he's going to crash into the box and be double marked and cause such carnage. I think he's going to open these little pockets on the edge of the box that Grealish didn't really benefit from last season because it was so crowded. And just an extra yard, just an extra couple of yards is all he probably needs. And with that first season under his belt, under Guardiola, I do look at someone like Grealish here and I just think, not only are you taking possibly a second year leap, and it's 7 million as well, but Erling Haaland is going to create such a distraction for you that this actually could mean quite a lot for you in terms of your production. And we might see something a bit closer to what he was at Villa in the last season. So Grealish to me is someone that's really interesting there because of Haaland, if anything else.
Yeah, and so affordable. Seven million, you know, I think Wilfred Zaha is 7 million, I think it is. So, you know, when you're comparing how many goals Palace will score, how many Man City will score, it's just absolute levels above. And I look at Grealish and think he's now had a year under Pep. And we see this a lot with Pep players. It takes a little bit of time to get into that system. And last year, his numbers were disappointing from an FPL point of view. He got a lot of starts. But I think it was 3 goals, 3 assists, which is so, so poor for someone of Grealish's potential. However, with the second season, and that's why he saw a price decrease. I think he started the season at 7.5 last year, 7 this year. But I'm with you, Sam. I think he'll get a little bit more space because of Haaland. Haaland getting on the end of a lot of those assists. And the second season could be huge for Jack Grealish, who could own that left of the three space. The big question mark for me is where Foden fits into the system. We know Pep wants to play Foden a lot in these big games and he starts more often than not. But where will Foden play? Last year, he played a lot central as the nine. He is very comfortable in the Grealish role on the left. But likewise, if we rewind about 18 months, the end of, I think it was the 2021 campaign, Foden occupied a lot of the space on the right of the front three and was very good on the right-hand side. We didn't see him there last year. But knowing Jesus played that role quite a bit last year and Sterling can, it might be Foden or Mahrez on the right-hand side. And unfortunately with Mahrez, what we won't probably have is the penalty appeal. Mahrez has been on pens when on the pitch. We've seen Jesus, we've seen Sterling, we've seen KDB all take pens for Man City and they've all got pretty poor records. Surely Haaland's going to be on pens and therefore it takes a few points away from those wide forwards.
Yeah, Dean did a whole thing on this as why you have to have Haaland. And I imagine, you know, is he the most expensive player ever to come into the game? I saw this on your Twitter.
Yeah.
Did we decide there was anyone ever more expensive? What is he, 11.5?
11.5. I mean, obviously when Ronaldo came back and Lukaku, but they weren't new players to the game. I think maybe we saw a Zlatan come in high, a similar price point. But yeah, I'm pretty sure Haaland, there's never been anyone more expensive than 11.5 hit the game. And surely the recipe is there for him to just go absolutely nuts. I mean, the fixtures are nice as well. We just need to see him in pre-season just to check on how he's slotted in. But no World Cup either.
Yes.
We've got to consider that for FPL. The likes of Mahrez, Salah, Haaland, no World Cup. They'll get a nice little rest and not have the distraction either.
Just on the City thing and the midfielders, just a little note that Rodri scored 7 goals last year in the Premier League and he grabbed 2 assists. And I used to remember Fernandinho getting these little assists as well, where he'd pass the ball to someone 30 yards out, 3-yard pass, and they'd whack it into the top corner.
The Tom Carroll assist, I believe. That's officially known.
It's the Tom Carroll assist. Fernandinho got a lot of those. Rodri with 7 and 2 last year. Is that repeatable? I mean, I'm kind of tempted to say he might get another 5 and he must be cheap and he must often get 3 as like a floor.
Yeah. The clean sheet is often locked in. So 3 is the floor. He doesn't do badly in the bonus point system either. All of his recoveries, interceptions. But he's got a score to get in the bonus. And I think last season was probably just a bit of a freak. A lot of those goals were Hitting hope isn't fair. Very good goals from the edge of the box.
He's got a shot on him, man. He's got a strike.
He really has, isn't he? And a bit of a, he's good on the bouncing ball as well with the half volleys.
He's got a few headers from set pieces as well, I think. He's just kind of like in and amongst it, despite the fact it's definitely not his like brief at all.
I don't think it's harder to predict, isn't it, when you're relying on a player to score worldies from outside of the box. It's much harder to predict unless you're back in a James Ward-Prowse who you know, James Ward-Prowse free kick feels like a penalty these days, but other than him,
sure,
harder to predict.
That's why I'm citing the sort of like the kind of relatively high floor with the 3 points rather than the two, and I'm just like is he cheap enough to be like, well, he's my fifth player?
I personally never pick DMs unless they're on penalties. I rarely go there. So for me, probably not. And it also occupies that slot. Remember, you can only have three Man City and you have three Liverpool. It you're less flexible if Rodri is there. And let's say Foden has this amazing spell. You need to get him in your team. Well, you've not only got to get Foden, but you've got to sell Rodri. Tricky at different price points.
Yeah, two transfers. Well, I look forward to Rodri's 20-goal season, Jenny.
Yeah. Yeah. Save this comment.
Yeah, exactly. We'll clip that one up for when Rodri's on 120 after that, the halfway mark, and see where we've got to. Which takes us nicely on to number one, Jenny.
Yeah, number one is about captaincy. And look, captaincy makes or breaks your season. Some FPL managers love it, usually those that have benefited from a good season of captaincy. And some really dislike it, because if you get captaincy wrong, you slide down your mini leagues. And for me last season, I had a good season. I finished at 16,000 overall in the world. My target was top 10K. I was a little bit short of that. If I had nailed captaincy and even had an average captaincy rank amongst the top 10K, I'd have finished at 3-4K, but I had a poor season with captaincy and I drifted out to the teens. So you've got to get that right. And one of my mistakes last season was I was a little bit rogue with captaincy. I didn't always back the obvious. And that's what number one is about here. We're discussing, should you go safe with captaincy or do you think a little bit outside the box? And in summary, I think you probably do a little bit of both, but I think you have to start the season fairly safe. And the reason being is if you're captaining the guys that are really highly owned and they perform, great, everyone rises with you. But if they don't perform, you don't see a big red arrow, because everyone is in the same boat. And there's this thing we refer to a lot in the community called effective ownership. And it's a little bit geeky, but I'll explain it for those that aren't aware.
When a player hit me with a deep dive,
it really is, right? Okay, so when a player's percentage ownership is over 100, if you haven't captained them and they produce points, you actually have a negative rank loss. So let's give an example here. Mo Salah, 50%. Let's go 75% of the game own Mo Salah in game week one. Everyone wants Mo Salah in the team. Three in every four teams have him, and then half of them decide to give him the armband, right? So effective ownership, you're adding the ownership plus the captaincy ownership. And if it breaks the 100% barrier, you're into a negative loss if you haven't captained them. So hear me out. So Salah is 75% owned. 50% of those owners decide to give him the armband. So we have to add on an additional 37.5%, right? So his effective ownership is 112.5%, right?
Yeah.
So if you captain him, great, you get your double points. If you don't captain him, but you own him, for every point he scores, you actually get a negative because he's over 100%.
Yeah, okay,
so
that makes sense.
You're cheering one. You own this guy. He scores a hat trick and you're actually annoyed. You are not celebrating his points. How crazy is that? So you have to captain him to celebrate his points. Now, the repercussions of going against Salah when he's 112.5% owned is, if you decide to completely ignore captaincy and your captain blanks, often the case if you go against Salah, he can sting you, then you just have the biggest red arrow. You fall millions in overall rank, you slide down your mini leagues. So it's very, very rare players over 100% other than Salah. So Salah's the only one to really be worried about. We might see it with Haaland because they've got to have super high ownership in the first place. Now, someone like Trent will have super high ownership, but no one's captaining Trent. So he never breaches that 100% mark. So what I'm saying here is, with captaincy early on in the season, play safe with the likes of Salah if you think 4 out of the 8 million managers in the world are going to captain him, because you don't want to fall behind too early. Now, of course, that's a little bit cautious. It's very Diego Simeone, very Jose Mourinho to kind of go really cautious for the first few weeks. But if you go rogue in the first few weeks and it doesn't work out, so many FPL managers give up by September and October. They throw their toys out the pram and the season's done for them. Now, this is a game that should be running for 9-10 months. You want to be still in the mix in May in your mini leagues. If you've given up in September because you've gone against Mo Salah in the first few weeks, it's just such a shame to ruin the game for yourself. So for me, play safe for the first few weeks. And then, of course, there's opportunity to go against De Bruyne. And there's great captaincy options when you look at Son or Vardy. Like, Leicester are a team we should probably be identifying this year. And Vardy is a player that will have lots of rests. You know, no midweek football for Vardy. He'll become a really nice captaincy option if you want to go rogue come October. But wait for the first few weeks and just play safe. There's a reason why the vast majority of the game are captaining Salah. Now, obviously, if you think he's not going to get the most points in any given week, you've got to back your guy, whoever that is. But more often than not, if the masses are going there, there's a reason for it.
Is this something that maybe we'll see a little bit of a drop this year purely because Erling Haaland comes into the game? I mean, feel like obviously Son towards the end of last season felt like a viable alternative. But for long periods of, you know, even the last couple of years, let's say, Mo Salah has felt like the only option, right? He's won what, the Golden Boot in 3 of the last 4 years in the Premier League? We're looking at someone who's, you know, who has performed consistently week in, week out for a long, long period of time. So at that point, it's kind of everybody is building Salah and everybody is captaining him because it's just not worth it not to, as you say, it's the whole point. Haaland coming in, does that split that a little bit? And therefore, does it suggest that maybe that effective ownership won't get over the 100 quite as much because there's more people sharing the load, to quote Samwise Gamgee?
Yeah. I mean, last season, I think we probably saw Salah hit that over 100%, probably 50% of the time, probably like 19 of the 38 game weeks. We might only see it 5 or 6, you're right, because the likes of Haaland will occupy a lot of that ownership. And, you know, game week 2, for example, Haaland plays Bournemouth at the Etihad. I think he's going to have a lot of people give him the armband, especially if he scores in game week 1 against West Ham or if he looks good pre-season. So I hope for the sake of the game, we don't get players hitting over 100% because it makes it a little bit boring. You don't want to just go with the masses just out of fear. We shouldn't manage our teams out of fear, but at times we do in the first few weeks for the reasons mentioned. So yeah, I hope Haaland and Son. Son last season went to a whole new level, didn't he? Shared the Golden Boot with Salah. Under Conte, Son and Kane look better than ever. Son is still classified as a midfielder, and I think the points will fly in there too. A lot of armbands will go on Son. So a nice spread, I hope.
So kind of indirectly here, we've sort of sussed out your formula for the opening couple of weeks here, Gianni. You're going to go big at the back with the premium defenders. It sounds like you're going to restrict yourself to the 2 premium attackers rather than the 3. And it seems like with the fixtures, those 2 premium attackers are going to be Salah, who's captained week 1, and Haaland, who gets the armband in week 2.
Yeah, I think so. And it's disappointing that I can't get Son. I don't think I can get him in at some point. I'm sure Son will come into the team. And the other team I gutted not to have an attacker for is possibly, and maybe I go to Madison at 8 or Barnes at 7, but is Leicester. I would love Vardy at 9.5 in my team. And for the we discussed earlier, you know, Leicester not having European football, we saw the benefits that gave the Arsenal team last year, who we're so close to getting 4th. No midweek football, no European away days. Leicester will benefit from that this year with their smaller squad. And Vardy, when he's fresh, is so good. Last season, he got 5.9 points per every Premier League start, better than any other forward. He's so good in this game. He doesn't need many chances to get points, to get goals. He's on pens. So at the moment, I'm thinking I'll probably go against Vardy and Son because I'll want to go big at the back. But I'll cover probably Leicester, and I think I'll cover Spurs with Perisic. We haven't discussed him, but my only fear with Perisic is Conte's rotating of fullbacks during games. We saw at Inter, he makes a lot of substitutions with those fullbacks and sometimes before 60 minutes. Oh. Now you need your defenders to get to 60 and they don't get the clean sheet points. And I was looking yesterday at Conte early on, 2 years ago at Inter, in the first 5-6 game weeks when Perisic was in his squad, he made a lot of subs at halftime. He made a lot of subs at 55 with his wingbacks. So I'm a little bit worried about Perisic, and it might be one that I just monitor for the first few weeks and then buy. But we know in front of goal, his expected assists, his expected goals, always super high. He finishes at times like a forward and he's listed as a defender. He could be gold.
He could also just, I mean, I know what you mean with the Conte wing-back rotations and him just, he's obviously a very physically demanding position. So he just tries to keep everyone as fresh as possible. Try and go, ideally it's like 70-20, right? On the split between the two players. Perisic is like super freak fit. Like, he is a he's like built in a lab. So he might be slightly more protected there, but at least past the 60 mark, he might be all right.
There is that. There is the option though that Conte loves Sessegnon, and I'm not just saying that because I love Sessegnon, like, which is fair. But like, Conte has really taken to Ryan Sessegnon to the point where, you know, Reguilón really dropped out of the side. Yeah. And to continue to give him minutes, I think he will look to do that, just in order that, you know, Perisic is obviously not going to be the long term option for Spurs. Now, whether Conte's there or not is a different question, but you know, it does feel like he's like, okay, you are going to be the wing back. You're just not the wing back I need right now, this second. And that does make it interesting in terms of that rotation out there. And I think you're absolutely spot on, Jenny.
Yeah, making the most of injuries as well. Let's say Perisic picks up an injury or he's a 3-game ban or whatever. Someone like Sessegnon, he's a 4.5 defender this season. Like, when he is playing, he will be absolute gold dust because he'll perform like a premium. And he's so far up the pitch, as we saw at the end of last season, he can get on the end of crosses and supply them. So the Spurs fullbacks, a bit like the Chelsea fullbacks, if Tuchel remains with the back three, definitely ones to target.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Leicester shout a lot, just to come back to that. Yeah. And I think you're absolutely spot on. Is there any more kind of low key tips you're looking at? I'm just trying to squeeze all of your gold dust out
just,
of you, Jenny.
Just on the Leicester thing as well, by the way. You mentioned Barnes was 7.
Yeah, that's good.
That's
value.
Enticing. Ricardo Pereira, is anyone backing him for a bounce back season? Because I kind of am.
4.5 he's been listed as because he was in and out of the team last year with injuries. But the year before that, I think he was priced super high because we know what he can do. The Leicester fullbacks are really intriguing. Firstly, is Brendan Rodgers going to play a back four or back five? And then you look at Castagna, who's been a good asset. Thomas was in the team a lot last year at left back. But yeah, for me, Justin and Pereira should be the standouts and both 4.5. So yeah, ones to definitely monitor. Justin obviously can play in a back three as well. It's worth considering if he is there, he's not a great asset. But if he's at wing back, we like him.
Ricardo can also play on the wing because he spent half a season on left wing randomly one time. One thing to note though, of course, if Leicester haven't worked on defending set pieces, they're not getting any clean sheets. So
ever
again. So let's make sure we check on that in pre-season before we start getting too excited about Leicester defenders. Midweek or not, if they can't defend corners, they are not getting any points.
Harvey Barnes is my shout. Chris Hamill on Twitter was tweeting about this the other day. We're talking about Rafinha and he was saying non-penalty goals and assists per 90 last season. Rafinha had 0.31, Martinelli 0.53, Smith Rowe 0.56, Harvey Barnes 0.69. Ooh. It's really high. Really high. Now, obviously, it's a relatively small sample size because, again, he went through a period where he wasn't playing, but Harvey Barnes, when he is on form, is one of those that I really, really do like. Though don't listen to me. I captained Kai Havertz at the start of last season, so I'm probably not the
Well, I'm going to be captaining Rodri this season, so don't worry about that. I do have a final question for you, Gianni. It's actually revolving around something you've already talked about, which is whether or not you're interested in kind of risking that kind of Grealish Pep Roulette style thing as opposed to your kind of locked in Mason Mount. And we take that situation and add in the World Cup and the absolute crunch of fixtures that is going to ensue in basically September and October, in which if you look at the calendar, you're basically looking at...
It looks like the championship. That's the Premier League schedule looks like the championship schedule for that period of time.
Yeah, every midweek is occupied pretty much if you're a top four team anyway.
Yeah, it's like back to... It's like three sets of like back-to-back midweeks. So five games in basically 14 days, more or less, Premier League, Champions League, Premier League, Champions League, Premier League. And then in the middle where there's a quote unquote respite, Nations League. There actually is no rest. I mean, there's barely any midweeks at all. So with that in mind, and the fact that fantasy often does feel like a bit of a lottery, this feels like lottery on steroids. And is it worth just degenning and rolling your sleeves up and being like, you know what? No one's safe this year. I'm absolutely getting on that Pep Roulette risk because even Mason Mount isn't locked in because your starters, your locked in players, they're so tired. Everyone is knackered. Everyone will be rotated, surely.
Yeah, those with the biggest squad should win and the managers that aren't scared to use their squad. And we know some managers are a little bit more gung-ho with rotation than others. But Man City, I think for the first four fixtures, because they're so good and because that's before the fixture congestion hits, I think I'll probably invest. And then should we see lots of rotation because of midweek fixtures and Champions League, then maybe you try and go to a safer bet for a team not playing in Europe. For example, you could easily go from a Grealish to a Barnes, or you could, same price, or a Foden to a Madison, both 8 million. So I think I will identify a third Man City asset. I'm not sure if it will be Mahrez, Rodri. Grealish or Foden.
Rodri,
Don't think I'll be going Rodri. But pre-season scouting is everything for game week one. And you see those players that just seem to have stepped it up a little bit, and you probably try and go there. You're looking at all the quotes coming out of press conferences, pictures from training, all sorts. Any little gain, any injuries to some players that mean others are more likely to start. The scouting come game week one is really important for that third asset. But for me, it's quite simple. It's the team that score the most amount of goals with brilliant fixtures, who are like odds on favourites to win the Premier League again, I think we want to be stocking up on their assets. So for me, I think I'll be looking at that third spot. But that price point's a really interesting one in midfield. Cover that 8 million-ish price point so you can easily move on other players, because the likes of Luis Diaz, Kulusevski, Saka, Bowen, Mount, they're all around 8 million. I think Bowen's 8.5, but the others are 8. So again, if they're not performing, it's one simple transfer. You don't really want to be taking hits to move out guys that could go and deliver at the weekend.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. One last one from me, and it's basically around the fact that obviously the game begins a month before the transfer window shuts, yeah. Right? In the, you know, players are coming in and out for another month. How often have you, I suppose, rather than will you, because it's a fool's game to predict, have you made those kind of changes to bring someone in who's come in late in the window? You know, there's a signing that comes in late for, let's say, a Chelsea on deadline day or 3 days before deadline day. That's a risky move, obviously, to bring in a new signing straight away, especially if they haven't been set at the start of the game. And then to kind of try and weasel them into the squad is a tricky kind of concept, I think. And I've struggled with that in the past.
Yeah, and we see a lot of wild cards when the window closes. Come game week 4 or 5, that's when we see a lot of wild card, because there's all these shiny new toys to put in your team. The benefit can be of some of those transfers is FPL don't get the pricing right, because let's take Rafinha for an example. Let's say he's been priced as a Leeds player and he moves to Chelsea. Well, hello, you've got yourself a Chelsea wide forward for 6 million or whatever. Now, when they did the Leeds price reveal in the last couple of days, they purposely didn't put Rafinha's price out there to give themselves a little bit more time. Likewise, Gabriel Jesus, when they did the Arsenal reveal, the Man City reveal, they held back. And obviously, as an Arsenal player, probably going to be a similar price point. But you can sometimes benefit from incorrect pricing, if you like, or even incorrect positioning sometimes. So definitely one to monitor. And if you can roll your transfers in the first couple of weeks, so by the time the window closes, you've got 2 free transfers in the bank, that sometimes forces you to then not have to wildcard, because maybe you make 3 moves and you only take a 4-point hit, for example.
You mentioned Rafinha there as the Leeds to Chelsea thing. When you mentioned his name, I was actually thinking of when he first joined the Premier League from Rennes.
Yeah.
And he was like wildly underpriced because FPL didn't know how good he was. I got him in extremely early doors. He played one pass against Aston Villa and I was like, he's in my team. He came off the bench for like 8 minutes, played one pass. I was like, you are mine. And he was absolute gold. So it's also a case of knowledge can trump the game sometimes. Of course, you're gambling on them settling quickly and all things going right. But if you know the player's good, go and get him.
Yeah, knowledge so important with the newly promoted teams as well. Often you question how much FPL has researched some of those newly promoted teams. A couple of seasons ago, Lundstrom at Sheffield United, they'd just been promoted. He was listed as a 4.0 defender. Yeah. And there'll be FPL managers listening knowing exactly what I'm talking about here.
Well, everyone
you saw
had him
by
the end, didn't they?
Everyone had him by the end. But if you had him game week 1 to game week 3-4, you were the real winner, because he performed well in those early weeks when not many had him other than the really engaged managers. So pre-season, we saw Lundstrom was playing as a number 8, box to box, and he was listed as a 4.0 defender, absolute gold dust. And he was in all of our game week 1 teams because on Twitter, we were all talking about it. But if you weren't there and didn't see that, you're behind the curve. You kind of missed out early on.
So it's a very important to, at this point, to say that Sam and I do a notebook on a Thursday during pre-season. Our spotlight episode becomes a notebook. We basically just make notes on pre-season. So if you are an FPL manager, come over and join us on our Patreon for a sort of extra content.
As an example, actually, if you'd have listened last year, you'd have known that Trevor Chalobah would have been a really good pickup week one. He scored, didn't he?
Yeah, long ranger, wasn't
it? About 15 points, and we talked about that and him settling into the preseason rotation. So case in point.
There you go. Yeah. Just a little plug, just randomly in the middle of it. So thank you, Jenny, for the tee up there. Just had to smash the serve home. And on that, I think probably, and unless you have any more gold dust tips, Jenny, we will call it there.
There's one quick one, because you asked about any sort of hidden nuggets. Yeah. Wolves are an interesting one for good fixtures. They're right at the top of the fixture difficulty rating. I think they start the season with Leeds, then Fulham. They play Spurs, but then Newcastle. So they got a couple of scenes, you know, Fulham at Molineux and Newcastle at Molineux in the first four, winnable games for sure. Pedro Neto, who I personally am a big fan of, I think you guys are too, potentially Wolves' best player. He's gone down in price because of his injuries. He's a 5.5 midfielder. Oh, I think there could be real value in Pedro Neto. So I think he's going to be in my game week one team, and I expect his ownership to be like 1%. So again, you could see some big gains if Neto is fit. He scored in preseason the other day. They won 4-1. Traore also scored. But yeah, Neto is definitely one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I like him a lot. One of my favourite players to watch, and very much an interesting one to keep an eye on. Well, Jenny, thank you so much for joining us. I suppose the natural thing to do is to ask you where everybody can find you on social and elsewhere.
Yeah, at Gianni Baticci on Twitter and Instagram. I give a lot of FPL tips on my Twitter channel, so do come and check me out there. Likewise, I do a show with Dean, who's also an FPL enthusiast. So check us out on Chasing Green Arrows. Dean and I talking transfers, but also FPL on Mondays and Fridays.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Gianni. It's been a real, real pleasure having you on, and good luck for the season.
Thank you, mate. Thank you for having me. And I look forward to listening to the show as the season develops.
Welcome back to Ranks FC. And thank you so much to Gianni for all his insight there. Make sure you are following him on all of those socials for all your FPL needs throughout the season. And as we build up and as more players and signings get dropped, I'm sure he's going to have all sorts to say about the new boys joining the league as well. But Sam, it's time to move over to everybody's favorite part of the week. It's time for Melon of the Week, and the last Melon of the Week without Dean. So he's going to be back on Melon duties next week. Thank you for putting up with us in his absence. I'm going to take this for the last time, and I'd like to award this week's Melon of the Week to FC Barcelona's content team. Now, Barcelona have announced the signings of Frank Kessié, good signing, and Andreas Christensen, also good signing, but slightly less of a good signing. And we kind of were looking at the way that they announced Christensen. And obviously, for the Kessié announcement, they were able to use this clip of Kessié basically tearing Barcelona apart, because they've obviously only got the rights to use games against Barcelona for their social media feeds. But in a preseason friendly, in America, I think it is, and Kessié looks absolutely unbelievable. He's wandering around, beating defenders at will, winning the ball back. It's a really cool little montage. For the Christensen one, they went a bit off-piste. They basically used the tagline, "You shall not pass, ... but he can pass." And then proceeded to put together a 2.5 minute montage of Christensen basically not defending very well, like squashing Luis Suarez at times, like basically last ditch defending, hoofing the ball out of play, and then occasionally doing like relatively simple 10-yard passes out to the wing. In two games in the Champions League, one of which I'm pretty sure Barcelona won
4-1. I think it's 3 games, actually. They had a lot of footage to pick from, and he didn't do anything good in any of them.
I'm pretty sure they lost all of the games, which isn't great indicative of signing a defender. In the passing montages he shows, there's like two good passes out of the 20 they show, maybe. Like, and one of those revolves around the fact that the wing has done absolutely brilliantly to keep it in play because it's a little bit overhit.
There is a good bit though. He does tackle Messi in the box cleanly at one point.
That is true.
Just run that for 5 minutes.
Just use that clip, man. Just use that clip. That's fine. If he could stop the great one, he's good enough for us. That would have been fine. But what a bizarre compilation of things to choose. It really was a lot. And ultimately, just one of those really strange ones where, you know, you're looking at this and thinking, how is this panning out? I'm not really sure. So, yeah, Men of the Week goes to Barcelona's content team. They've really not done themselves or their new signing any justice whatsoever with that signing. And with that, welcome back. I'm still capable of doing it again this week. And we had quite a lot of comments last week on your gibberish siren, Sam, and I did want to use it again, but you've refused outright. So I'm going to hand over to you for the gibberish.
It's embarrassing, mate. Embarrassing. I'm glad you're back on it. Right. Gibberish this week is life's simplest pleasures, a top three. I've been constructing this in my mind for about 6 months. I've really come to believe in this list. And this weekend, I think we found number three. We completed the list. Now, number three is a hole-in-one, a momentous feat that I recently achieved at Pirate Mini Golf in the Smuggler's Cove. 16th hole, a challenging gauntlet of contours and rocks.
I like the fact you played 18 holes of mini golf. That's
you could actually play 36 if you wanted to, but I got a bit bored after 18. But yeah, it's a challenging course. So, you know what? Just on the 16th hole, I just found the vision. I found the groove. Stroke with precision, hole in one. Very, very satisfying noise as well. And honestly, mate, I was on cloud nine for the rest of the day. It just made absolutely everything
you should be too.
Better. My celebratory burrito, I think, tasted better than usual. The drive home, like every light was just green, green, green. Honestly, think maybe even the sun was shining just a bit brighter than it probably would have done.
Maybe, mate, I'll be honest, even just the idea of just hitting one and writing the one on the scorecard is just a dream, isn't it? That's what you're actually looking for here. It's not necessarily to do with, you know, how good or bad it is. It's just writing that one on the scorecard. Just 100%. Amazing.
And I beat my wife by like 8, so that was also quite cool. Anyway, number two, the sound of running water. The most relaxing sound in all of the world. It is enticing. It is calming. It's really simple. It's really, really good. The sound of running water can make literally any room or any space in the world, no matter where it is, an area of true relaxation.
Unless you need a wee.
But then just go to the toilet and come back and it's fine. This sound is so relaxing. It managed to coax me to sleep on the floor of an airport using my bag as a pillow. Something I genuinely thought truly impossible. That is how effective and soothing and calming the sound of running water is.
I tend to use albums for this, man. I'll be honest. Enya is my go-to. Stick on Enya watermark. I can fall asleep anywhere. But that is, you know, that's just by the by, I suppose.
Fair enough. I love the sound of running water as long as you've been to the toilet. And number one in life's simplest pleasures is freshly baked warm bread.
Yeah, agreed.
What an experience. Just everything about it, really. The smell, the warmth, the fresh crunch, the soft middle. Oh, I'm actually quite hungry now thinking about it. And this is something that the Thai households through the years have enjoyed an awful lot because my dad used to bake fresh bread from scratch.
I genuinely thought you were talking about like people from Thailand. I was like, what do you mean? Like, as opposed to anyone else, just like Thai households in particular?
What, my people. My dad used to bake fresh bread pretty often. And it used to be amazing, to be honestly, like it used to waft through the house. And when my friends used to come around and say like, oh, do you want to come out and, I don't know, dick around on the bikes or something like that, they'd always used to catch the smell and always be like, oh, can I have a bit of bread? It was ridiculous. It was like feeding the village. And you know, I've carried that tradition on in a slightly less talented way. As his less talented son, I buy part baked rolls from the supermarket and I finish them off in the oven.
I was gonna say,
either,
I do this
either
too.
Way, it hits the spot, right?
Yeah, also like I will often go, there's a Lidl right next to my house and is my favorite place on earth. There will be a gibberish ranking at some point about the best three things I found in middle
bakery.
Of Lidl.
Oh.
But the Lidl bakery is so good. Like often I will just wander in, just get a little bread, like 50p, and then straight back out again, come home, eat my warm bread, very happy. Just butter, bread and butter.
Unreal.
Simple.
Yeah,
it literally is live bread and butter.
It is. The paninis, you know, and all that stuff from the fresh bakery are so good. You know. Anyway, look, you know, nowadays we're always hearing this phrase, let's get this bread. And even though that is specifically a reference to money and not sourdough, I believe it should be, let's get this freshly baked warm bread.
Yeah, tiger bread for me, or giraffe bread, I think they call it in some places. That's my must. Sourdough, I'll be honest. Well, don't get it. Don't get the hype.
I think it's overrated, but it's better toasted, I think. But then it gets a bit sharp.
But tiger bread, I could just eat forever. Agreed. Just eat an entire loaf, thing of butter, ideally Kerrygold, but clover if you can't. And then I'm a happy boy, a very, very happy man.
It's Rachel's favorite too. Yeah, this.
Now, there we go. Good taste, Rachel. Good taste, me. Excellent. Right, on the bread bombshell, we're going to call this one a day. And all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to you, Sam.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you very much to Gianni for joining us earlier. It's a real pleasure as ever to have him on the podcast. And make sure you are following him for all those FPL tips throughout the season. I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. Thank you as ever for listening to us. If you do want more from us, we do have two extra episodes every single week over on our Patreon. The link is in the description. We think it's well worth it. The price of a pint per month, and you get 8 extra episodes, access to the community, Dean doing Q&As on transfers, all sorts going on in our Patreon. So make sure you give that a look if you're looking for something more at the start of this season. Enjoy the Euros as they begin, and we will be back next week to talk all things football with added Dean Jones, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening. Take it easy. Peace.
Gotta walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer practice, then there goes the extra time for a jog. That's okay. Maybe next week.
When everyone else relies on you, it's easy to put your needs last. Therapy is a dedicated time to focus on what you need to be happy, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. BetterHelp offers convenient online therapy on your schedule. It's the same professional service you'd get from an in-person therapist, but with the option to communicate when and how you want, by chat, phone, or video call. Go to their site and fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.